Good morning. It's 9 minutes past 6 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine for the rest of the day. The Real ID Act was sponsored by Wisconsin Congressman James Sensenbrenner, and at the time, a press release from his office said that the bill is aimed at preventing another 911-type attack by disrupting terrorist travel and bolstering border security in the U.S. Essentially, the bill requires states to rework their individual driver's licenses to federal standards, including specific required personal information, and then linking that information together into a large database accessed nationwide. I have some tape here I'd like to play. Representative Sensenbrenner, in an interview with Lou Dobbs, explains how his legislation is aimed at terrorism and also at public safety.
Well, they say it's a national driver's license, and it's not.
Right.
It's optional amongst the states. If the states want to have their driver's licenses be valid for federal ID purposes, they've got to do a couple things. One is to make sure that the people they issue those licenses to are legally present in the country.
Right.
And secondly, they've got to check to make sure that somebody does not have a valid driver's license issued by another state.
Right.
This is not just an anti-terrorism action. We do know that the 9/11 hijackers had multiple
right.
driver's licenses from five states, but it's public safety as well, because if you're up to 11 points on your driver's license without the Real ID yeah. Act, you can use your cousin's address
yeah.
in the next state and get a clean license and continue to be a bad driver on the road.
That's Representative James Sensenbrenner, interviewed on Lou Dobbs in February of 2007. Since then, not too much has happened on the bill, partly because of the expense. The federal bill doesn't fund any of the changes that's requiring, and the states have been reluctant to shoulder the entire cost. Now, critics of the Real ID say there is a growing rebellion against the proposal on philosophic grounds as well. The Real ID, they say, is really a de facto national identity card that raises more issues than it solves. Our guest during this hour is Chris Calabrese. He is the counsel to the American Civil Liberties Union Technology and Liberty Project, and he says the measure would be the first step towards a national ID card. By the way, Congressman Sensenbrenner was invited to appear on this morning's program, but was unable to do so. What are your thoughts on Real ID? Were you even aware that the legislation was on the books? And does the idea of a national ID card frighten you? Or do you think that it would accomplish some goals worth pursuing? Would it, in fact, stop terrorists at the border? Call with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234, or if you're in Madison, at 263-1890. You can also get a hold of us with email, and that option is talk@wpr.org. Chris Calabrese, good morning. Welcome to Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first, let's start with what I read somewhere. Some people feel there is sort of a groundswell coming up against Real ID. Where is this groundswell coming from?
Well, I mean, it's coming from a remarkable number of places. I think it's the thing that's so surprising about Real ID is how many people don't like it. I mean, the states, civil liberties groups like ours, ordinary citizens when they're told about it. The groundswell right now is coming in state legislatures. More than 30 states have introduced legislation to opt out of Real ID in some form, and two states have actually passed such legislation, Maine and Idaho. So it's really the states that are saying, you know, you're not doing anything to help us pass Real ID, and we think it's a bad idea, so, you know, we'd like to get out.
And the states, the main opposition that I've been able to gather from the states is that expense factor, because this is not cheap.
Right. Oh, no. I mean, the most recent cost estimate from DHS says that this will cost $23.1 billion with, you know, zero aid from the federal government.
Now, your opposition to it as a member of the part of the ACLU would be on more philosophic grounds, I suspect. And I want to talk about that aspect of things. You know, if you listen to Representative Sensenbrenner, essentially he says, well, it's just a driver's license. That's all the same across the country. That's really all it is. It's nothing more. What is your take on that?
Well, I mean, I think that vastly undersimplifies things. People know that the driver's license is used for a lot of things today. Under Real ID, it would literally be your passport to ordinary life. I mean, right now, Real ID, as it's configured, would have to be used to get on an airplane or enter a federal facility. And those are big things. I mean, for example, if you want to, you know, contest your day in court, you really need to get into a federal facility. But soon it'll be expanded to be used, you know, to open a bank account. They're already talking about needing it for a passport. It's been talked about to use as a voter card. I mean, literally, without a real ID, you won't be able to survive in modern society. So now we're talking about having a national ID card. You said it was the first step to a national ID card, Gene. I would actually disagree with that. I would say it's the last step. We're there now. We're at a place where the government has a piece of paper. In this case, of course, it's plastic, but that you have to present in order to do things that ordinary Americans take for granted, like, you know, bank or, you know, travel. So when you have a card that does that, that card does a couple of things. The first thing it does, of course, is track every time you use it. I mean, one of the things that the congressman didn't really talk about, but that's very invasive, is the fact that all this, that what's called the machine-readable element, and that's, in this case, the barcode that's on the back of your driver's license,
right?
All of those will now be standardized. So it'll be possible to buy a common reader, you know, very inexpensively, that anyone can purchase, anyone being Walmart or, you know, your local municipalities. And then all they'll need to do is ask you for your driver's license, and they'll be able to, you know, put it under the barcode scanner, and then they'll have a permanent record of something that you did. And that will start to turn into a permanent profile, even more so than we have today, of all of your movements, all the things you do. It'll be much easier for Walmart. They won't even need to use a loyalty card. They'll just have you in the computer, and they'll just scan your, you know, the barcode on your driver's license. So we'd start to build a permanent record, and that's a very scary thought from a privacy point of view. But then also, Real ID turns into a means ultimately of deciding who can ride on an airplane, who can ride on the train, who can do things like enter a federal facility. And that's even more disturbing. And I guess finally, as we talk about using all these things, you have to remember this is a 300 or 250 million person database. There's going to be a lot of mistakes. There's going to be a lot of things that are wrong here. And as you try to sort these things out and figure out what's wrong with your Real ID and why you can't get one, you're not going to be able to give that license to fly. Eventually, if it's used for something like employment verification, you're not going to be able to give it to your employer to get that new job. People are going to get tangled in a bureaucratic mess. And that's just, you know, not only is it un-American, it's just, you know, it's going to be a nightmare for all of us.
Chris Calabrese is our guest this hour of the Council to the American Civil Liberties Union's Technology and Liberty Project, and we are talking about Real ID. There is a protest this weekend in Madison. If you'd like to talk about the subject, 800-642-1234. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 18 minutes past 6 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine. Elizabeth Edwards announced yesterday that her cancer has returned and spread to her bones. Coming up after 9 this morning, Kathleen Dunn and her guests discuss the physical and emotional impact of breast cancer. This hour, we are talking about Real ID. And Chris Calabrese is our guest, the counsel to the American Civil Liberty Union's Technology and Liberty Project. And we are talking about Real ID. There is a protest in Madison, actually, coming up this weekend, and a number of other protests around the country that are protesting what our guest says is the last step in establishing a national identity card. If you'd like to be part of the discussion, you can call us at 800-642-1234. If you're calling for Madison, it is 263-1890. Chris Calabrese, we'd like to continue our discussion now about the Real ID. And one of the questions I want to bring up, because we're talking about this being the last step on a national ID card. And, one of the questions that comes up is, you know, the whole issue of a Social Security card and so on. And doesn't this just, you know, some people could argue that this is just really a better version of that.
People have been using the Social Security card as an identifier for a while, but I think you'll notice that people are also, and I say people, governments and private businesses are starting to pull back from using it because they're realizing it, you know, opens people up to identity theft. It causes a lot of problems. It's not clear what the benefit is for the individual in having their Social Security card out there all over the place. I think the real ID is a little different, though, because you are really talking about something that, you know, nobody can make you present your Social Security card, or present your Social to prove things. But, I mean, here we're talking about, you know, here's my real ID. This demonstrates that I'm a real citizen and I can really have the right to do all these things. You know, it's never been the case in this country where you had to prove you were someone in order to take advantages of what it means to be an American. I mean, that's part of what it means to live in a free society, is we're pretty much allowed to do what we want unless we break a law or, you know, harm someone else. Now we're talking about changing that dynamic to a place where instead you have to prove that you should be eligible to do the things that we take for granted.
Congressman Sensenbrenner says that, you know, the terrorism angle is just one facet of this, that there is another public safety angle as well. You know, he talks about somebody who's got a lot of points on their driver's license in one state now, and then they just skip to another state and get another driver's license and so on. What do you think about that angle, that there is more to it than just simply being an anti-terrorism card, a national ID sort of card?
Well, frankly, I just think I'll call it disingenuous. I mean, there's already a database. It's called the Problem Drivers Database, where states share information on problem drivers. There's a similar database for commercial drivers, truck drivers. And those were aimed at, you know, the real public safety concerns that we're talking about, making sure that you have a problem driver and they can't skip to another state. That's the thing I think that is maybe lost a little in this. It's not like states don't care about having secure driver's licenses. It's not like they're not aware. I mean, one of the loopholes that's often talked about is that 9/11 terrorists were able to get Virginia driver's licenses. What's not talked about so much is that that loophole was closed a week after 9/11 by the Virginia legislature. I mean, so states are able to address these concerns, and frankly, they're usually able to address them in a much more cost-effective and less invasive way than something like Real ID.
Let's move on and find out what listeners think. We have a call from Madison, and Vern joins us. Good morning.
Yes, my comment is that there is no system currently being used other than in the private sector for entering certain buildings that definitively shows who a person is. Even our government, with their use of the Social Security card, it means basically nothing. These numbers are all being fabricated. Driver's licenses are fabricated. ID cards to get into bars. Absolutely everything is fabricated until they use some sort of a body part like a finger with a fingerprint, a retina scan, or whatever. There isn't really anybody knows who anybody is anymore.
So are you saying, Vern, that you're in favor of this?
You have to have a good system that works, that cannot be falsified. And even the system that they're talking about with this ID or whatever, a card with a picture or whatever, it's probably not going to work if it isn't foolproof. It's just not going to work. There's anybody knows who anybody is. They go into airports, they show this, they show that, they whatever. There isn't anybody really knows who anybody is anymore.
All right, Vern, thanks for the call. Let's give our guest a chance to respond to that.
Well, Vern, I think you have a very good point. It's true. It is very hard to know who someone is. And frankly, that's what makes this a little puzzling from an anti-terrorism point of view is, of course, A, this card is going to be compromised immediately. You know, we hear stories about corrupt DMV officials, about DMV systems being broken into all the time. So this card is going to be falsified almost immediately. And also, frankly, even if you do have the correct person on the correct card, identity actually doesn't tell us a whole lot about people's intention, whether that's, you know, a Timothy McVeigh, who was the Oklahoma City bomber, but before that was a dedicated military veteran, or Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, who before that was a math professor. So simply knowing who someone is actually doesn't tell you that much about security. But you're right, this card will get faked, and that's actually really troubling because the impression is going to be that, oh, this is the foolproof card. This is the answer. But, of course, it isn't. All it means is that if your identity gets stolen and someone gets, you know, a copy of their information on, quote-unquote, your real ID card, the havoc they're going to be able to wreak is even greater than it is now.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we're talking about Real ID this morning. And Chris Calabrese, in terms of what they are requiring on the Real ID card, there's some standard pieces of information from state to state. And what are those?
Well, they're going to require a standard piece of information to prove your identity, usually a birth certificate, in some cases a foreign passport and a visa. They're going to require your Social Security card. Probably most troubling, or not most troubling, but troubling, will be they're going to require you to prove your principal address, which is, frankly, almost impossible, I mean, because there is no government way to prove your primary address. So we're talking about bringing in things like bank statements. But, in fact, the regulations, the recent Department of Homeland Security regulations, suggest that you should bring a bank statement in to the DMV to prove your primary address. And then this information, along with your birth certificate and all the other information from Real ID, would be scanned and electronically stored. Now, I can't think of anything actually more troubling in terms of my privacy and frankly, the risk of identity theft than having my birth certificate, my bank account number, and someone willing to produce a fake ID for me.
What about if, there are lots of people that don't drive, that mm-hmm. probably don't have a principal residence, you know. What about those people? Do they have the opportunity to get the card in any case?
What they would have to do, I think, is just sort of pick an address. But you're right. I mean, there's an exception process, but it's actually pretty unclear whether, A, the exception process will be flexible enough to actually help people like, for example, the homeless, people who, you know, live in RVs and travel a lot. But if it is flexible enough to help them, then is it so flexible that it sort of makes Real ID a mockery? Because, you know, a security system is only as strong as its weakest point, right? So if the exception allows you to bypass 90% of what's in Real ID, what's the point of having Real ID for, you know, the 1% of people who want to bypass the system? It's troubling, and I think we recently saw in Colorado a very good example of how this is, you know, could be problematic. Colorado was an early implementer of some of the provisions of Real ID, and what they discovered is that there are people who just don't fit in the Real ID model. For example, this man, I believe his name was Bobby Hartman, had suffered from a mental illness, had actually been dropped off at a home for the mentally ill when he was like one and never saw his parents again. But, you know, through hard work and, you know, the help of a lot of people, he had built himself a life where he was living independently. He was, you know, able to take care of himself with disability payments and food stamps. But then Real ID came along and you know, he didn't have a birth certificate. There was no way for him to prove who he was. Couldn't get himself an ID. You know, was having trouble.
And we're going to have to hold Bobby's story till after the break, and we will return to that. We're talking about Real ID this hour, and we're inviting your calls. In the meantime, I'm Gene Purcell, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 24 minutes before 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, in for Joy Cardine. This hour, we are talking about Real ID, and our guest is Chris Calabrese. He is the counsel to the American Civil Liberty Union's Technology and Liberty Project, and we'll be taking your calls on the subject. If you're calling from Madison, it is 263-1890. Everywhere else, it is 800-642-1234. And Chris Calabrese, before the break, we were talking about a specific example of this concept gone wrong in Colorado.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about Bobby Hartwell's story. And I was just saying that Bobby, you know, because he was mentally ill and because he was dropped off at a home for the mentally ill when he was one and then never saw his family again, had none of the things that we take for granted in terms of proving your identity, like a birth certificate. And he had, you know, he had already lost food stamps when his, you know, the people who sort of help and support him became aware that the reason he wasn't able to get food stamps is because he couldn't get an identification card. He's not a driver, but he needed to get an ID card. And that was because he didn't have a birth certificate. He couldn't prove who he was. It was interesting. The sort of moral of the story is that Colorado officials were appalled by this. They stepped in. They're moving to make some changes to the system to allow him to get an ID card. But what's interesting is, under the Real ID rules, all exemptions and all changes and any sort of special circumstances have to be approved by DHS. So it won't be possible for a local official to just step in and say, wow, we have a special case here. Obviously, this person isn't a terrorist. We need to make sure that he can get an ID card so he can get the benefits he needs. It'll have to go through a bureaucracy in Washington. And meanwhile, people's lives are going to get trampled on.
We're talking about Real ID this morning with our guest, Chris Calabrese from the American Civil Liberties Union. And we're going to go to the phones right now. Let's move to Tom. He is with us in Green Bay. Hi, Tom.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm personally in favor of a national ID card. We have lots of different instances with travel of felons, with sex offenders, with the possibility of foreign nationals coming in with the idea of doing terrorism, with illegal aliens. We have a whole, scenario of all different cases where some type of identification is required. If I travel right now and I am going to go away from my home of residence or my city of residence and travel even just within the state, any place where I'm driving a car, I have to have a driver's license with me to identify who I am and to prove that I'm authorized to do that. I think that the position of your guest, where he's saying, no, we should not have a national ID card, is somebody who just is ignoring all of these other situations where some type of identification is now required, and the technology is now there to do it. The other thing is the $30 billion price tag which they put on it. In fact, it's putting a individual ID cost at something like $75, which I think is a greatly overblown, estimate of what the cost will be. Thank you much. I'll take your comments off the air.
Tom, thanks for the call. Chris Calabrese, a couple of points there. Mm-hmm. And I guess let's get to the first one first. Tom says that you need a driver's license right now. If you travel, you need to show it for all sorts of things. And what has been lacking in all this is the technology to tie all these together, and that there is a real need there. How do you answer somebody like him? Because, he's obviously given this a lot of thought, and he thinks it's a good idea.
I understand that. I guess I would respond with first something that I think is an overall point, and that's there's a reason that when you say the phrase, your papers, please, it's associated with every totalitarian state you've ever had. Now, he says he needs to show identification to prove all kinds of things, but I would say that's actually not the case. He needs identification to show, if he's stopped by the police, to show that he's a driver. But most other instances, I would say he actually doesn't need an identification card to do normal things. In fact, you can actually get on a plane today if you're willing to have an extra search without an identification card. So I would take a little issue with the idea that you have to have identification for everything. But I also would note that there's a difference between having a piece of paper that's purpose is just to prove that you can drive, or potentially, say, to prove that you can vote, and have a piece of paper that you need to sort of prove your place in society. And as, for the other examples he cited, for sex offenders, for terrorists, again, I don't believe that identity equals security. Simply knowing who someone is does not tell you whether they're a terrorist. It does not tell you anything about them, except that, you know their identity, or I would argue, frankly, in the cases of a terrorist, you know the fake identity that they have managed to secure in the real ID system. As for the second point, the cost number is $24 billion, and that's not my cost number. That's the Department of Homeland Security's cost number that they put forth with their recent DHS regs. So I could tell you how they created it, but I'll just say that I think it's accurate, and it does amount to about $95 for every American. Perhaps that's not a high cost, but I would argue that it is, since it's not achieving any kind of security benefit. I think there's better uses we could make of $25 billion for our security.
Let's go to Madison now, and Ruth joins us. Good morning, Ruth.
Yeah, good morning. I have two problems that come to mind immediately that are going to affect thousands of people. The first is that even the day before this is implemented here in Wisconsin, there will be people getting their driver's license, probably with an 8-year expiration, because that's what we have. But there's a 4-year implementation for the real ID. So all these people whose driver's license expires more than 4 years after the implementation date are going to have to come in, even though their driver's license hasn't expired, and do this process along with everybody else. And if you think the DMVs are crowded now. The other thing is that a friend of mine, his birth records at Cook County, Illinois, burned up in a fire. And that was the Vital Statistics Bureau. He has been trying for decades to get a copy of his birth certificate. He's a citizen. His parents were born here. His grandparents were born here. You know, there's no question that he's a citizen, but he can't prove it. And he can't get a passport without an ID. And all those other documents are pretty much immigration documents, and he didn't immigrate, so he doesn't have any of those. There's no way for him to get a copy of his birth certificate. It's gone, gone, gone. The vital statistics record is gone. This is pre-computer. That stuff was on paper. And thousands of people whose records burned up in that Cook County fire, that who were born, you know, before that fire, that their records are gone. There's nothing. What are they supposed to do?
Ruth, thanks for the call. Let's put that to our guest, Chris Calabrese. The last example is one that we were sort of touching on before with the gentleman in Colorado, and I have a confession, actually. I haven't seen my Social Security card since I was about 17. And I imagine, you know, it sounds funny, but I imagine there are a lot of other people like me and like the person Ruth was talking about who really can't lay their hands on some of those records no matter what happens.
That's precisely the case. The other example that we frequently talk about is, of course, the victims of Hurricane Katrina,
mm-hmm.
who frequently left, you know, New Orleans with nothing but the clothes on their back. This is sort of precisely the problem of the federal government imposing a one-size-fits-all solution on, you know, motor vehicle bureaus. You get there's just no question. I mean, I would have to assume somehow that people like the person Ruth is talking about will have to be sort of put through some kind of exemption process. There'll have to be a way to exempt them. But, of course, this highlights this sort of absurdity of saying we're going to pinpoint everyone's identity because, the circumstance where someone doesn't have documents to, you know, support their identity is precisely the person that a terrorist trying to get a national ID card is going to imitate. So you sort of say, wow, every law-abiding American is going to jump through 10,000 hoops so the people that we try to catch can, buy, you know, do an end run around the whole system. As for Ruth's other example of crowded DMVs, I mean, she's, of course, exactly right. You're going to have – not only are you going to have all these people whose renewal dates are going to have to be truncated and have to go back to the DMV early, you also have – nobody will be able to do Internet or mail renewals the first time around. Nobody, because everybody will have to bring in all their documents to be verified and to be scanned. So all those people who were able to do it over the Internet are now standing in the DMV. And then, you know, people who don't have their documents the first time around, you know, they didn't realize they needed all these new things, they're going to have to come back. So, yeah, you're talking about much longer lines at the DMV. And, you know, really, we're not to be flip about this, but we're combining, you know, the hell that is getting your driver's license at the DMV with the people who brought you Hurricane Katrina. And it's a recipe for, you know, it's a recipe for mayhem and a recipe for a very bad bureaucracy.
We're talking about Real ID this hour with Chris Calabrese. He is the counsel to the American Civil Liberties Union's Technology and Liberty Project. And we'd like to know what you think about it. 800-642-1234. There is a protest this week in Madison. And are you one of those people taking part? Or are you like Tom in Green Bay? You think this is a pretty good idea? If you'd like to call from Madison, it is 263-1890. I'm Gene Purcell in for Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 12 minutes before 7 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine. Coming up at issue with Peter Donalds as the NCAA men's basketball tournament advances to the Sweet 16 this weekend. Peter's guest after 5 claims that college athletes are being exploited. That's coming up later on this afternoon on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we are talking about Real ID, with you and with our guest, Chris Calabrese. He is the counsel to the American Civil Liberty Union's Technology and Liberty Project. And we'd like to find out what you think about the whole concept of a one-size-fits-all driver's license for all Americans. Coming up next, let's go to Toma, and looks like Mary joins us. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Thank you. Good morning. I just wanted to say that I couldn't agree more with your guest, Chris. This is such an intrusion into everybody's lives, everybody who's law-abiding, whatever, who's going to do what the government says. Well, I'm quite frankly, and I don't think I'm alone, I'm quite frankly tired of every time there's a new program, there's something like this, it's like, oh my gosh, there's this security problem, and 9/11 is waltzed out in front of us again. I'm tired of having feeling like I've got to be this little turtle who has to hide from everybody when I don't think that's true at all. I'm not willing to take my personal identification, my birth certificate, my social security number, my card, and certainly not a bank statement. I don't like that idea at all.
Mary, thanks for the comments. Chris Calabrese, there's somebody who is in your court. And I guess the question I have for you as a follow-up is, you know, how many people are really aware of this? Because, you know, there's a protest this weekend in Madison, but, you know, before this, I haven't heard a lot about this for the past couple of years.
Well, I think it's one of those things where, like anything else, it was passed a couple of years ago, and 3 years seemed a long time away. And now we're a little more than a year away, and it's starting to creep up on people that somebody's actually going to have to comply with this. And you know, you're starting with the people who are going to have to do the initial work, and that's the state governments. And they're starting to hear about it. And the more they hear, the less they like. And I think that that's probably true of individuals as well. I mean, there is, I believe, sort of at least half a mind out there that says that this is never going to come to pass. I mean, frankly, it's not just that Real ID, and we haven't really talked about this, but Real ID was passed in a fairly undemocratic manner. It was basically just attached to a massive spending bill, and folks really didn't have any choice but to vote for it. But, you know, part of the thing with being passed in such a manner is it didn't really go through those, like, democratic processes where we, you know, trim a bill and make it a little, you know, easier to comply with and just sort of generally improve something by having it vetted by various groups. Instead, it just passed. So it's got all these things that are really outlandishly difficult to comply with. Like, for example, the actual text of the legislation says that every document, like your birth certificate that you present, must be verified with the issuing agency. So I guess that means that, you know, if I bring you my birth certificate from New York, you've got to call the state of New York or the town of Tarrytown, where I was born, and verify that this is a real Tarrytown birth certificate. Now, can you imagine that the work that would entail? I mean, they're talking about creating computerized databases of birth certificates to make that easier, but still, you're talking about a massive undertaking here. So in looking at that, I think a lot of people sort of said, there's no way they're going to be able to do this, and they sort of shook their heads. But now we're coming up on it, and nothing's, you know, it hasn't been changed, and the regulations were just issued, and now folks are starting to get a little nervous, I think, and say, wait a minute, you weren't really serious about, you know, making us do all these crazy things with this ID card, were you? So, and you know, and our hope is that Congress is going to act and is going to say, you know, we need to modify this to make it, you know, more workable and much, you know, much more aware of privacy.
Let's head over to Whitehall right now, and Lori is with us. Hi, Lori.
My question is, what's going to happen to people like the Amish and the Mennonites and the German Baptists who don't believe in having their picture? I mean, it's a religious belief on them. And they certainly travel outside of the country. They have relatives in Canada. They go to Mexico for medical procedures. What are they supposed to do?
All right, Laurie, I'll put it to our guest. Are we looking at other exemptions, Chris Calabrese?
Well, you know, to be honest, this is really, I think, one of the scariest and most tragic examples, because there is no exemption for this. The Real ID Act says that you have to have a photo on your license. There is no if, and, or but, and the Department of Homeland Security has made that clear. So states actually issue about 260,000 licenses without pictures on them every year, many of them for exactly the folks that your guest was talking about. And I just don't know what these people are going to do. I mean, I've heard stories, you know, that Mennonites are going to move, but there's nowhere to move to. It's a national program. I mean, unless they're going to go to Canada, I guess. It's scary and it's sad. I mean, we're talking about wiping out entire ways of life for just a bureaucratic, you know, idea gone crazy. So, yeah, it's really troubling, and frankly, I don't know what those folks are going to do.
Now, we've heard from some callers this morning who think this is a good idea. Others think it's going too far. Is there a middle ground? You know, Congressman Sensenbrenner says it's going to help with issues at the border and with terrorism and so on. I mean, is there a way to accomplish what the congressman wants without doing something like this?
Well, I wouldn't want to speak to what the congressman wants to do. I would say there is a middle ground. One of the things that Real ID abolished was an existing process that's called the negotiated rulemaking, where essentially you bring all the different stakeholders in. You call, you know, the state officials, civil liberties groups, federal officials, and you say, work out what you think a good driver's license would look like. You know, what's a secure driver's license that protects privacy? And that process was actually going on. It was part of the original legislation to implement the 9/11 Commission report. So, and Real ID wiped that out. So, I mean, we think that returning to that negotiated rulemaking would be a good start, getting us started on a process that was a lot more common sense and that, you know, frankly, respected, you know, the privacy concerns. And there actually is legislation in Congress right now that would do that. So we hope that will get moving.
Let's get a couple more calls in before the top of the hour. Charlie is with us, and he is in Fish Creek. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Your comment earlier about not having your Social Security card prompted me to remember the process of getting mine recently, not getting my birth certificate back, and now I need to get a new birth certificate to get a passport. And I found it surprisingly easy for anybody to get anybody's passport. You don't have to show up. You don't have to prove that you're the person you claim to be, and they mail it to you. So if it's the basis of all of that security, it seems like it's perhaps another illusion of security.
All right, Charlie, thanks for the comment. And Chris Calabrese, he does bring up another point. Is a card like this, and I think you've touched upon it, really just an illusion of security?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think we're talking a little bit about what some security experts call security theater, you know, more about the show of protection than the actual protection. You know, we're going to have the exact people who you want to keep from getting this card, which is to say criminals and, you know, possibly terrorists, are going to be the first people to get it. And then, you know, everyone else is left with to pick up the pieces.
Let's go to Oshkosh right now, and Steve is with us. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Chris, I wonder if you could comment on what seems to be the inevitable state of America. I think most Americans would be very comfortable with armed guards on every corner and police checkpoints on highways and White House censorship of news stories, and Real ID just fits into, I think, the mindset of most Americans.
All right, thanks for the comment. And Chris, I'll have to warn you that we've only got about a minute or so for your response.
Well, all I can say to that is that's my worst fear, but it's not my greatest hope. I mean, I still think that a lot of Americans, and we've heard some of them today, believe in freedom and believe in a world where we can do what we want to do as long as we're not bothering anybody else. And, you know, I just hope that that's the case.
Do you think Congress is going to do something about this? I mean, you talk about returning to a process that started and then stopped and the hope that somehow Congress will, you know, take some kind of action. But is that actually on the horizon?
I do. I mean, I think that if the alternative is spending, you know, $24 billion for a program that many of them didn't vote for, I think they'd rather return to a more common sense model.
Chris Calabrese, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your time. Chris Calabrese, who is the counsel to the American Civil Liberty Union's Technology and Liberty Project, has been with us for the past hour, and we have been talking about the issue of what is called the Real ID. And the program was prompted in part by a protest that is taking part in Madison this weekend. It's a topic that's been talked about for some time, and now events do seem to be coming to some sort of conclusion, and we'll see how all of that goes. If you would like a copy of the program, you can order one by calling the radio store. That number is 800-747-7444. And when you do, ask for program 323. A as in Apple, 323A. And don't forget, you can also listen to the programs free of charge online at WPR.org and just look in our program archives. The program was produced by Steve Williams. We had on-air production this morning by Leo Duran, and I'm Gene Purcell, filling in for Joy Cardine this week. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.